Thousands of protesters continue to gather in big groups across America this week. Will that spread more COVID cases? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, worries that the protests and unrest around the country and in our area could spread coronavirus. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, we're spotlighting good people and groups doing positive things in this pandemic in our What's Good Wednesdays. But first this hour, the latest on the pandemic. Statewide, the Florida Department of Health reports 57,477 cases of COVID. That's an increase of 647. The state is at 2,530 deaths, an increase of 70. 70 additional deaths from COVID-19 were recorded across the state yesterday. That's the largest single-day increase in nearly a month. In our area, we have 2,572 cases of the virus and 97 deaths. Meanwhile, the U.S. Surgeon General said Monday that we should brace ourselves for new outbreaks of coronavirus resulting from the nationwide protests over the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. These are protests and demonstrations that have seen thousands of people gather in close proximity. Marco Predik is the infection preventionist at UF Health Jacksonville. He's been watching this, and he's on the phone now. Marco, good morning.
Good morning.
So good to have you on the show. And here's our question to callers as we continue to watch protests across the country over racism and police violence. Public health officials are watching this for another reason. They're worried about spikes in coronavirus. Give us a call with your thoughts and questions. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we're already getting your comments on our Facebook page. Marco, what's your reaction to the statement by the U.S. Surgeon General Monday? He said he's very worried we're going to see new outbreaks of COVID-19.
So I believe the Surgeon General statements are very well-funded. We are seeing large gatherings of people in common areas. They're not adhering to social distancing, not saying that it's the most important thing right now going on in the country, but saying that we still, in these times, you still want to make sure that we're social distancing, washing our hands, and most importantly, if you are out, please do wear a mask. That is the greatest stopper to the spread of COVID. Wear a mask no matter where you are, what you're doing, what activities you're doing. It will help stop the spread, but we do expect to see an increase of cases potentially due to these large group gatherings.
And including here in Northeast Florida, where we had, I think, probably the largest civil rights demonstration in the history of Jacksonville over the weekend, about 3,000 people downtown. There was another large gathering last night outside the Duval County Courthouse. About half of the people you see out there are wearing masks. It's not universal.
Correct. And that's the concern for the public health officials and those of us within the hospitals is that we are seeing these images and not everybody is wearing their mask. We want everybody to exercise their rights, but still we want everybody to be safe. So our message is jointly, please do wear a mask. Please, if you are sick, give everybody else a few feet of space or just inform them so they can give you a few feet of space if you are out. But that is our main concern right now, is the lack of masks across in the entirety of the group.
It's 549-2937 to join us. You know, Marco, even before these protests erupted, we were seeing a decline in mask wearing among the general population, and it's become a political football, too. Some people are angry about being encouraged or even ordered to wear a mask in parts around the country. What would you say, as a public health expert on infection and preventing the spread of infection, when you see people resisting wearing masks because they see it through a political lens, what's your response to that as a public health expert?
For me, my response to that is, if you're looking at it in a political sense, it's more for just a sense of health for the community. It's a community health sense. It's not a political view. The reason we recommend masks is that even if you aren't sick or you don't even know you're an asymptomatic carrier, what you're trying to do with wearing that mask is protect yourself from getting it if you don't have it. But also it's helping you spread it if you're asymptomatic, spreading it to others. So for us, it's less of a political issue, more of a public health safety issue. So if you approach looking at a mask as you're helping your fellow community, that may be an easier way to understand why we're recommending masks and why we still do encourage masks out, even though restrictions are being lifted rapidly and across the country.
We're talking to Marco Predig, infection preventionist at U of Health Jacksonville. What are your thoughts about protests around the country and in our area and the continuing spread of COVID-19? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. You know, Marco, we've seen police deploy tear gas in protest groups around the country, including here in Jacksonville. Could the smoking gas that's being used to disperse some crowds, I've seen some reporting saying that could make people who've been exposed potentially more vulnerable to coronavirus. Is that true?
In terms of the effect of gas on making people more susceptible to coronavirus, that I have not seen any clear links. There have been no studies. We have seen that due to this gas, though, people are coughing and having a difficulty breathing, which is making them take masks off, which is a side effect, which within large groups exposes them and increases their risk of being exposed to somebody who also may be sick and also have removed their mask at this time. So that's more of the concern with the effect of gas on these masked people removing them.
We also know that COVID-19 is disproportionately impacting Americans of color. And although the protests have been multiracial, multi-ethnic, they are centered around the Black experience in America. And there are more Black and brown-skinned people coming out than white people. Will this whole dynamic we're seeing right now, will that further harm people of color in this country who we already know are more likely to get sick and more likely to die?
I think with the increased proportion of people coming out to the protests, I think that all depends on how serious everybody's being about protecting themselves, how good they are about wearing their masks. Once coming back from the protests or at the protests, carry hand sanitizer. Make sure you're sanitizing your hands if you touch surfaces right when you come home. Perform good hand hygiene. Also, when you're out in the protest, please just be mindful of touching your face and then shaking hands with others coming into contact. You don't want to spread germs towards your face, towards your mouth, your nose, or your eyes. It's something you want to consider to try to prevent.
Let me ask you as well, President Donald Trump announced on Twitter yesterday that the Republican Party is pulling the Republican National Convention out of North Carolina because state officials there could not come to terms with the Republican Party over how to hold a political convention and still protect the public, still do social distancing, limiting large crowds, and all of that. We are hearing that Jacksonville might be a contender to get the Republican National Convention later this summer. Mayor Lenny Curry is actively lobbying to persuade the National Party to come here. As a public health official, what are your thoughts about that? We're already seeing some petition efforts to not bring the convention here, citing public health concerns. People are worried it could further spread coronavirus in this community. What are your thoughts?
Agreed. There are concerns. It's a large gathering of people, which the public health field can recommend wearing masks, doing hand hygiene, performing everything, but you can't make everybody adhere to those conditions. But another thing is, COVID is an actively evolving situation. The medical field is making strides forward. We are having more cases and seeing more deaths, but within the hospitals, we are managing the cases better. So we can't predict the future situation. So I think there's a lot of variables that affect this. But again, I think the greatest one is, how do we limit group size? How do we maybe have groups within, find the limits, separated from each other by 6 feet, 10 feet, and how do we make sure that they're doing the best to protect everyone within that group? I think those are going to be the challenges faced if we are bringing the convention to Jacksonville, Florida.
And going beyond protests, conventions, we had the largest single day increase of COVID deaths in nearly a month in Florida yesterday. So I think it's just important we continue to stress to the public that the virus is still out there and people are still at risk. Can you talk a little bit more about the latest numbers?
So the latest numbers, we are seeing an increase across Florida that, again, we can't say it's directly linked to the reopening, but we are seeing more persons in the street. We are seeing less protection in terms of masking, in terms of hand hygiene. Prior, there was more sanitizer available when you were going out. Now, I think it is reduced. It may be due to increased usage with more people out on the streets. But also, we are starting to see COVID spreading a little easier because travel restrictions have been lifted. We're also seeing some nursing homes affected that weren't affected prior because they were being protected by the shelter in place. And now family members, loved ones, are going to visit a family they haven't seen in months, and they may inadvertently be bringing it to these nursing homes, and these are at-risk populations. So some nursing homes are seeing a spike as well.
We're speaking with Marco Predick. He's the infection preventionist at UF Health Jacksonville. What are your thoughts and questions about the continuing spread of COVID in America? That is still going on. 549-2937. John at the Beaches. Go ahead, John.
Yes, I certainly respect what he's saying, but the priority is a little off. It's more important to have social distancing as opposed to masks. He lists the mask as the top priority. It's better to have people 6 feet apart with no mask than 1 foot apart with masks.
Why do you say that?
Most of those masks are ill-fitting. The CDC says it's more important to have social distancing than masks. That came out today.
Okay. I take your point, John. And so, John, do you think then that what's your reaction then to people gathering in large groups? They're outdoors, granted. They're not confined inside a building, which can spread the virus even more quickly. People, you know, they're expressing their First Amendment rights right now. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's fine. But, you know, being together within the 6 feet, 2 feet apart, 3 feet apart, whatever, they're more susceptible. They're going to cause a flare-up. I think it's a little selfish, quite honestly.
John, that's John at the Beaches. Marco, what about John's point that it's better to be 6 feet apart than wear a mask, he says?
So in terms of John's point, he is correct. The CDC does say social distancing is the best way to protect ourselves. But in light of these large groups gathering and protesting, you can't assure that everybody will follow these distance guidelines. So the next best thing are the masks. We do understand that masks don't all fit well, don't all fit correctly, but still they do offer some level of protection. So if not being able to do the first best thing, which is the social distancing, being able to wear a mask, which is the second best thing you could do to protect yourself, is what we do encourage within these large groups. And social distancing may not be possible, even if the masks may not completely cover your face. They are still doing something to help you when within these large groups.
It's 549-2937. We have so many tweets coming into the show about this and emails too. Here is one from Tom. Don't place the blame on protesters should COVID cases rise in the next couple of weeks. On Memorial Day weekend, my block in Riverside had three good-sized parties. One was a pool party. I spent a lot of time on my porch and saw not one partygoer wearing or even carrying a mask. I was very disappointed and fully expect their immature behavior to help spread the virus, he says. What about that, Marco?
Correct. As I mentioned earlier, with the loosened restrictions, I think this is also creating a sense of ease within the community where it may wrongly indicate that masks aren't still required, even with us being able to travel. And what we do want to encourage is please still do wear masks, even in these large group gatherings that are now allowed. We still want to be mindful of our surroundings, try to keep distance, but still wear masks. So he does have a point. We did see an uptick of group gatherings, and we are still not sure what the results of these may be long term. So
Seems as though the country has sort of decided, okay, we're done with this. We're done with all of these efforts to flatten the curve. Or how worried are you about that?
Correct. And I think that's partially due to how well medicine was able to respond and catch up and set protocols and procedures and public health as well to how to best manage this. So we did see a dip after the first bump of cases. And I think now we are worried that we were able to manage it. We showed we could have a reduction. And now that we start opening back up, there is a concern that there's a sense of ease to it and that people won't protect themselves, that we may see a second bump, which we are starting to see an increase, especially within Jacksonville and Duval County, as you had mentioned, with the numbers.
Sally in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Sally.
Yes, I was just thinking about, I was listening to everybody talk about social distancing and masks, which I agree with, but I think the main thing that I feel like the United States is such a top country in medicine and everything else, and that there was an antiviral drug that was stockpiled, I can't spell it, after the H3 and the H5N1 viruses, and the government does have that. I think that the medical field should be concentrating on a cure instead of vaccines and all this stuff that people have to go through, because we are a nation that has scientists all over the world.
Okay. Marco, let's bring folks up to date on where the public health community is with developing a vaccine.
In terms of developing vaccines and using other maybe pre-existing medications, the United States, there is a lot of work going on behind the scenes at drug companies and manufacturers, but I think the reason that we're not seeing these come out as quickly is they go through extensive testing. There is many levels of trials, and before they roll out anything to the public, yes, some of these may cure COVID within like an early sense, but we don't know these side effects later on. So what the issue is, they can't just roll out a drug without knowing side effects, the dangers, and potentially the long-term effects, because what we don't want to do is solve an issue right now to create a worse issue down the road due to some medication.
Chris in Palm Coast. Hi, Chris.
Did you say hi, Chris?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, now you're on the vaccine. And this is what I have to say about vaccine is I agree. Instead of talking or going through red tape and everything about getting this vaccine going, a lot of people aren't and savvy about homeopathy, and it is a curative medicine, and I have been on it.
Okay, Chris, but you know what? That's honestly, you're not what we're talking about today, but I appreciate the call.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris. John in San Marco. Hi, John.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I've grown up here in Jacksonville, and I've had a few different, interactions with police, and I just think it would be helpful for people to realize that it's not always black people that are abused by police. You know, I've had some altercations with them. Like when I was 16, I had been arrested for intoxication, and they beat the hell out of me. And just a regular resident, a white person, but it's not always, black people that are getting abused.
Thanks, John, I'm sorry that happened to you, and I appreciate the call. You know, that brings me to another question, Marco. We did see several dozen people get arrested in downtown Jacksonville this weekend, and they had different skin tones. Here's a tweet from a listener. Wouldn't being jailed spread the virus more than crowds of people wearing masks? I'm concerned about JSO unlawfully holding people who are already bailed out in what we know are likely transmission spots, jails and prisons. You know, one of the demands of the protesters this weekend was to release people from the jail that are being held on minor and nonviolent offenses, so as to reduce the transmission of COVID inside the jail. Now, I know you don't want to comment on the politics of the moment, Marco, but what about that health aspect of this? People in tightly held facilities like a jail are more at risk of getting the disease.
Correct. In terms of the jail populations, it is close quarters within the population, but working with the Jacksonville jail down here, we know that they do have public health practices and medical practices set in place where they do test inmates who do show signs or symptoms. They are testing. They have protocols and procedures to address if someone turns positive, how to move them out of the general population, how to isolate them. They are working within the medical scope of trying to do their best to prevent the spread too. So they are aware of the situation. They are trying to do their best to prevent the spread even within jails and prisons.
Right. And so you were seeing protesters, among other things, call for people being held for nonviolent or minor offenses to be released. What do you think about
Correct. And that, again, is more of in terms of what the political situation is and what they're doing within the jail system. But it you, again, are going into a larger population within the jail, which, again, it's going to be harder to keep social distancing. So there's negatives to it. But, again, that's dependent on the situation and what JSO and our local government believe is deemed a punishment for what crimes have been committed.
We're talking with Marco Predick, infection preventionist at UF Health JAX, about the continuing spread of COVID. When it comes to efforts to bring the Republican convention here, now that North Carolina is not going to hold it, here's an email from a listener. Speaking of group activities, can someone please tell the governor and the mayor to stop promoting bringing the Republican convention to town in August? They are not listening to their own advice, he says. Marco, do you think physicians and infection specialists like you will try to make that case to local and state officials that it's not safe to hold a large convention in a Florida city with up to 50,000 people gathered together?
Yeah, I believe that we will express our concerns. I think higher up officials in the government who do infection prevention, especially physicians as well, will express their concerns. I think they will express the concerns. We're going to need solutions and feasible solutions, very robust solutions for them to bring the convention here. If we can have all those concerns addressed, then I think it is possible to proceed forward with bringing the convention here. But I do agree that there will be concerns, and we do hope those are heard and addressed at the highest levels for bringing the convention here.
Yeah, and you would assume any city that wins the bid to take the convention, they're going to have this controversy, and the Democratic Party as well. Their convention is scheduled for Milwaukee, and they are having to reconfigure how that gathering will happen as well. Amira on the West Side. Amira, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to say that JSO, I actually believe, are doing detriment to themselves, not because they're arresting protesters, which if they're not being peaceful, I completely understand that. But when you don't release body cam video, when you don't release autopsies of people that's been actually murdered or killed or what justifiably or questionably by the police, it makes the citizens not trust you. And that's what JSO has chosen to do. And I also think that that's part of the whole idea of why should I trust the government to give me a vaccine when they can't even be transparent with the things that they do right now that does not include invading my body, but can.
Thanks, Amira. Marco, this is a problem agencies and institutions are having everywhere, instilling or winning back the public's trust. You're in public health. How do you feel about that cynicism and that lack of trust?
Correct. And we understand that, especially in terms of COVID, it appears that when COVID first arrived in the United States, public health was unprepared to respond. And we understand that the public lost faith in its ability to respond because there was a delay time. There was a lag from when the outbreak first started to us responding, to us being able to put practices into place, and they were changing. They rapidly changed from no precautions, and then they escalated quickly to everybody wearing masks in public being a recommendation. So right now, I think, well, at least within my own field, I can't speak for others, we're trying to win back the public's trust by being as transparent as possible, giving them as many updates as possible, even though sometimes I know it's frustrating to keep getting updates upon updates. But we are working our hardest to protect the public and for them to have buyback within public health and medicine as well in the United States again.
Sure. And we're working to inform the public, too. Here's a comment on our Facebook page from Rich. I haven't seen a single story linking a spike in the virus in the demonstrations or riots. Why has the virus been pushed off the front page? Is the danger over? It's not, Rich, which is why we're interviewing Marco today. And let me ask you as well. When it comes to COVID, it has mysterious symptoms. People are having a hard time figuring out the roots of the disease. There is a growing body of evidence now to support the theory that coronavirus infects blood vessels. that it's a blood disease, not just a lung disease. Can you explain that quickly, Marco?
Correct. So there have been cases now which we're seeing cardiovascular issues linked with coronavirus. And some of these, you may have coronavirus that exacerbates a pre-existing cardiac issue that you didn't know you had before because it was minor. And the stresses of your body fighting coronavirus make these issues worse. That actually was released by Hopkins Medicine. Some of it's due to the lack of oxygen. Some of it's due to stress. Also, Harvard released a study saying that it can cause inflammation around the heart because of the required response, your body's response to the infection. So there's a lot of cardiovascular symptoms that come due to the stress, lack of O2, and just some that come around from having minor conditions that you may not have been aware of that now come to the forefront due to the extra added strain to your body.
So there's still a lot we're learning about this virus, but bringing it back to your original message, we need to be mindful that the disease is still out there, that deaths and cases continue to rise in Florida and around the country. And by the way, testing spots have been closed in Jacksonville, at least temporarily, due to public safety concerns. So there's that wrinkle too. What, Marco, if you could leave our listeners with one final thought about this, what would it be?
One final thought would be, no matter what activity you're performing, if you're going out to protest or just going about your everyday life, please do be mindful. Try to social distance when possible. Please wear a mask when possible and if possible. Also, if you're feeling sick, please either inform those that are you around that you're feeling sick or stay home if possible if you have the days off. And then again, good hand hygiene and cleanliness practices when out in public would be the messages I would leave the listeners with.
I hope people are listening because as we've been talking about, this virus is still with us and it still poses a threat. So please do be mindful. And I want to thank you, Marco, for getting on the line with us to share your thoughts. We really appreciate it.
And thank you for having me on and for everybody's time.
He's Marco Predick, infection preventionist at UF Health in Jacksonville. And there's much more still ahead on the show. We're going to talk in a few minutes about our What's Good Wednesdays. Amidst all of the alarming and negative news out there, there is good in this time. And there are people and organizations in our area doing amazing things. This is the day of the week when we spotlight that. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. Also, one local man got COVID and recovered. More people are recovering than are dying. We're going to hear John Dondero's story in just a minute. That is up next. Take a listen.
I was feeling great. 2 days later, I was grabbing my chest. It just was so painful.
John Dondero's recovery from COVID-19 and more after the break. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
Most Vistar branches are open during regular business hours for drive-through service. For access to safe deposit boxes, check with the branch. Complete listing of branch hours and updates at vistarcu.org/coronavirus. Vistar Credit Union, insured by NCUA.
The Voidcast from WJCT is a musical journey through Northeast Florida. I'm the host, Void Magazine editor Matt Shaw. Join me while I cut through the digital noise to share hand-picked local music stories. WJCT.org/Voidcast.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Introducing the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT, offering music lovers a variety of ways to enjoy favorite artists and discover new genres. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
Welcome back. Well, we hear a lot about deaths from COVID-19, but more often than not, people recover from the virus. One of them is certified financial planner John Dondero of St. John's County. Full disclosure, I've known John for years. He's my friend and our family's planner through his company, Net Worth. Now, John has been on the mend from a nasty bout with coronavirus. He's doing great now, and he shared his story. Let's listen. John, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Sure.
So you are doing fine now, but you definitely had a rough few weeks with COVID-19. When did you first start getting sick? And you were on a ski trip overseas, right? Do you think that's where you picked it up?
When I got back on the 15th from the trip that was cut short, I started feeling, maybe 4 days later, feeling really tired, like I had mono or the flu. And I saw on television how they were doing the testing down at the stadium. Jaguar Stadium. So I drove my car down there and they put a swab down and tested me. And then 5 days later, they called me and said, hey, you tested positive. You need to quarantine. And at that time, by that time, I was feeling great. So I'm like, okay, well, thanks for that information. I'll quarantine, but I feel great. 2 days later, I was grabbing my chest. It just was so painful. A lot of wheezing, that kind of stuff. And I decided I would go for the first time in my 57 years to the emergency room.
Wow.
That's what I did.
So you went to the ER, and then what?
And then they checked me in. They were great over there at Baptist South, and they tested me right away. I didn't get the test. I was on a Thursday. They got the results. I was still in the hospital on Saturday. They said, hey, good news, bad news. Good news is you tested negative this time. Bad news is you've got bilateral pneumonia, so the COVID probably jump-started the pneumonia. And so I was in the hospital another day, so a total of 4 days, and then they released me, and I basically recovered from home for a few weeks before I felt any better.
So you're really pretty much on the mend now, but
yes.
It's not like recovering from a cold, is it? It was more of a process.
Yeah. And the doctor, I had some Zoom meetings afterwards. I was released, and my PCP, my primary care physician at Baptist South, he said, whenever you have pneumonia, you're going to have that nagging dry cough for several weeks, and he was spot on. And it's just kind of sticking around, and a little weak, but getting better every day.
That's good to hear. You know, I've known you for a long time. I should disclose you're my financial planner for my family with Net Worth. And so when I heard you got sick, I was immediately concerned. And it's so good to know that you're doing better. What are your thoughts as, the economy opens back up and stores open back up? We see less social distancing, people wearing masks and all of that. As someone who's been through getting this virus and recovering from it, how does that all sit with you?
Well, I think that people are maybe being a little too loosey-goosey, and that we should continue to wear the mask, especially when we go into stores and stuff. I mean, we have to open up the economy, but we have to do it prudently and follow the governors and phases and things like that. I mean, sure, we're disappointed that we're not back to what we were before, but we need to stomp this thing out, because you don't want what I had.
Right. You wouldn't wish it on anyone. It's serious.
Exactly.
What was like, could you, isolate what was the worst moment for you? What was the most scary moment of it?
Well, I was never really per se scared. Mm-hmm. The worst moment was trying to get the pain pills when you're in the hospital, because they're so concerned about, you know, addiction issues and stuff like that, and they're constantly asking you, well, what level of pain are you at? And I'm like, well, I'm near to the guy that's crying on the chart, so can I please have the pills?
Wow. And did they give them to you?
Oh, yeah.
So where was the pain? In your lungs? Is that where it hurts? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Man. Well, it's good to see that you're doing better, and I do hope people take seriously what you're saying, because whenever we talk to anyone who's had COVID, they all say the same thing. This is no joke. Take the health measures seriously, everybody. And so I do hope people listen to that. And I want to thank you, John Dondero of Net Worth, based in Ponte Vedra and on the mend from COVID-19. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you. Take care, Melissa. Bye-bye.
Well, along with most other businesses, hospitals are reopening more fully this month, and they are working overtime to reassure the public it's safe to come in and be treated if you have a non-COVID-19 related health issue. I spoke about it with Tom Van Osdal. He's CEO of Ascension St. Vincent's Hospital in Jacksonville. Tom Van Osdal, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
So you've been vocal along with other healthcare leaders around this community in recent days about how important it is that we continue to wear masks and practice social distancing. The pandemic is still with us. Can you expand a little bit more about that, why you think it's important we not get too weary of doing this stuff right now?
Yes, absolutely. The virus, while we're very pleased that we're on the downward curve from the surge that we saw, the virus quite probably will be with us in our environment for some foreseeable period of time going forward. And it's, you know, we have to remain vigilant, because if we are in situations where folks are being exposed, they're in close proximity for long periods of time, there is a probability that we could see a resurgence. And you know, while no one knows for sure exactly what will happen, it's prudent to take every precaution to lower that probability and to do everything that we can to protect our friends and our neighbors and try to reduce, again, the probability of a resurgence of COVID-19 that, again, is going to be in our environment for some period of time going forward.
Right. And how does that extend to your hospital campus? Hospitals are beginning to do elective surgeries again. They're trying to balance that with treating some COVID patients and reassuring people who come into your property that they're not going to catch the virus by being in a hospital. What are some of the challenges and issues you're dealing with?
Well, great question. And we are open. And one of our key messages is that we want people to get the care that they need. Too many folks have delayed getting seen for potentially serious situations that need emergent diagnosis and treatment. And we're open. We are practicing every prudent precaution. We have the personal protective equipment we need. We're practicing all of the infection prevention practices and disinfection practices that are prescribed. It is safe for folks to come and get the care that they need, and they should not delay. In fact, it's not safe to further delay care. And that goes for access to both emergent care and physiologic care, or care for physiologic needs, as well as for behavioral health and mental health needs. Challenges, we are open. We are performing non-urgent procedures. We are testing every patient approximately 72 hours prior to their scheduled procedure. I'm glad we're doing that, because we have seen some tests positive for patients who are otherwise asymptomatic. So we're taking, again, we're acting out of an abundance of caution, taking every measure to make sure that patients who ultimately, you know, have a procedure with us, have been tested, know that they're negative, know that they're safe, know that that the staff that caring for them are safe, and wanted to make sure that, again, that we're reopening, because folks, you know, we deliberately delayed care for folks who could wait appropriately, and that really helped us reduce the amplitude of the surge that we saw. But now, while it may have been safe and appropriate to delay care or defer 12 weeks ago, it likely no longer is, and so it's time for folks to get the care they need, and we want to make sure that we're here for them and that they feel comfortable and safe coming back, and we can assure folks that we are doing everything necessary to protect safety.
All right. Well, thanks for the update, and we appreciate your time. He's Tom Van Osdell, a CEO at Ascension St. Vincent's in Jacksonville. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Well, it's Wednesday, hump day, and recently on the show, we made a decision that we were going to take a little time each Wednesday to spread some light and positivity, because let's face it, the news is often depressing and even scary right now. But amidst the pandemic, economic woes, unrest around the country, there are still so many instances of people and organizations in this community doing amazing things, doing positive things to help each other. In that sense, you know, there's a sense of unity in this crisis we're in. And we want to spotlight that every week. We call it our What's Good Wednesday. So here's what we're noting this week. We're going to begin with Cowford Chop House. They've donated more than $18,000 to the Jacksonville Art and Music School through their Move It 5K, which took place in February. These funds, which were celebrated in a virtual check presentation, will support JAMS. The Jacksonville Arts and Music School has virtual curriculum and summer camp going amid the COVID outbreak. So kudos to Cowford Chop House and JAMS. Leadership St. John's, the class of 2020, a St. John's County Chamber program, is on a roll. They hosted an auction entirely online recently, and all proceeds are going to the Homeless Coalition of St. John's County. They raised almost $10,000 from cash donated by the community toward their goal of $15,000, and they say all of their Leadership St. John's classmates have been diligent and supported the effort through these incredible times. Kudos to them. Now, if you know of something good going on in this community, send it to us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, and we will spotlight it in our What's Good Wednesdays. Up next, speaking of something else good, local students shine at the National Scholastic Art and Writing Awards. That's in a moment. We'll be right back.
Congaree and Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering picnic meals in a safe, dog-friendly farm setting where social distancing is top priority. Visit congareeandpenn.com for more information.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Civil protest is part of the DNA of Atlanta. And the city where Martin Luther King Jr. preached, what does the pulpit sound like today?
to be silent while this is happening is not only to be on the wrong side of history, I submit that it is to be on the wrong side of God.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, the civil rights fight then and now, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the protests over the death of George Floyd and the police response with Wes Moore. He's the author of a book about the 2015 death of Freddie Gray in the back of a Baltimore police van and the uprising that followed. Moore is president of the anti-poverty organization, the Robin Hood Foundation, and author of the best-selling book, The Other Wes Moore. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Mostly black neighborhoods are filled with businesses owned by immigrants, particularly in Minneapolis. Some of those businesses have become collateral damage in recent protests. Others are simply bearing witness. Across America returns to the Twin Cities to hear what's being done to dial down tensions, some of which were around long before this week. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. The Scholastic Art and Writing Awards recognize student achievement in the visual and literary arts. This year, a local student is among them, and we're so pleased to speak with her. She's Luz Manugia, a senior at Douglas Anderson School of the Arts, and also on the line, Daniel Embry, Director of National Programs for the Alliance for Young Artists and Writers. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Hello.
Thanks so much for being with us, Luz. You are one of 16 students selected to receive top honors in the 97th Annual Scholastic Art and Writing Awards. It's also known as the Gold Medal Portfolio. You're a senior at DA, so you have a nationally honored writing portfolio, and it's titled Scene Connections. Tell us about this portfolio.
So my portfolio, called Scene Connections, I wanted to write about my family's identity and the struggles that they've been through as immigrants and from Colombia. And I just felt like all the pieces in this portfolio are about connections within the family and within our community.
Would you mind reading a short excerpt from your portfolio?
Yeah. So this piece is called Es Mi Cali Bella, which translates to my beautiful Cali, which is the city that my family is from in Colombia. I read the ending of it. Bella, beautiful. I see so many people speaking, singing Bella, beautiful songs that I can't repeat. I cut and sew each part of their Bella, beautiful mouths in place of me, mine, and stitch their tongue against me, my jaw. I try to finish the song, but I stay in silence. Thank you.
That's beautiful writing. Okay.
Thank you.
So congratulations again, Luz. Daniel Embry, your Director of National Programs for the Alliance for Young Artists and Writers. Luz is one of 16 students selected to receive this huge honor. Tell us a little bit more about how she was chosen and why this is such an important way to showcase young writers in America.
Sure. Every student who applies to the Scholastic Art and Writing Awards applies to a regional program where their work is viewed by local artists and writers who they're looking for work that is original, work that shows technical skill, and demonstrates the emergence of a personal voice or vision, which I think you could definitely see in Luz's work. The best work that gets recognized locally then advances to New York City for a second round of national judging. And that's where the top honors, the Gold Medal Portfolio Awards, which include a $10,000 scholarship, are selected.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I think now more than ever, it's really important to recognize teen voices. We want to make sure that these teenagers are seen and heard. And that's why We do what we do, and we've been doing it for a long time now, almost 100 years of recognizing creative young artists.
Right. Since 1923, you've been honoring teens in grades 7 through 12. Here are just a few of the famous names that have received this award. Andy Warhol, Truman Capote, Sylvia Plath, Stephen King, and Ken Burns. Our PBS viewers certainly know who he is. So, Luz, you're in very good company. There's going to be a big virtual ceremony on the 4th that people can stream. It's at artandwriting.org. This is pretty exciting, Luz. It's got to feel pretty good to get this honor.
Yeah, I'm so honored. I'm so happy and shocked that I got it.
You shouldn't be shocked. You're a good writer. What do you hope to do with your writing after you get out of school?
I want to work for a publishing company when I get older. So I hope that writing is always in my life because of that.
I hope it is too. And I want to congratulate you once again, Luz Manunga. She's a senior attending Douglas Anderson School of the Arts in Jacksonville, one of 16 students around the country receiving top honors in the 97th Annual Scholastic Art and Writing Awards. Again, you can stream the celebration tomorrow night. It starts at 6 p.m., and all of the young writers will be honored virtually. There will be a lot of celebrities on hand for this, too. Just go to artandwriting.org/celebrate. Luz, congratulations, and thank you as well to Daniel Embry. He's Director of National Programs for the Alliance for Young Artists and Writers. That's the organization presenting these awards. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you so much for having us.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer, Heather Schatz, is a very good writer, I should point out. Josh Torres is our director. Jessica Palumbo does a lot of writing as station news director, and so does our digital editor, Bill Bortsfield. Keep your writing coming to us in the meantime. Send those emails and all of your feedback to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed any portion of today's show, our podcast will be up later today on our website or wherever you download your podcasts. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And by the way, this show is now re-airing at 8 p.m. again, so you can catch it then. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow and connect with you then. Have a great Wednesday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.